This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? Then you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick to 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100 so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy. Fantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, a podcast about relievers. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Rick Graham. We're without Colin Elslager today, as he has decided to watch football. Boo, but that's okay. At least we got the two of us. Rick, how's it going? How's your week going? How are you feeling about wrapping up your fantasy leagues later this month?
Yeah, it's going good. I think it could be a little bit better. I've had a couple disappointing finishes to the fantasy season, but still, you know, fighting and scrapping in some leagues, trying to work my way into a championship round matchup or something. I too am excited for football season as well, but this is still peak baseball season, and yeah, I've the last month of the year plus playoffs is the best baseball we get.
Yeah, next week's just going to be a solo podcast. It's just me talking relievers to myself. Do I sound any different?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, I have a mustache. I guess you can hear that. Oh,
yeah, that's what it is. It's like this like you aged like 15 years overnight or something.
Yeah, I'm glad that it comes over the audio, because I wanted the listeners to know that I also that I have a mustache and I'm working on it. I do not have great facial hair. Not only does it come in too light, I can't really grow a beard, but also it comes in a color that's too light, so it just looks like I have a shadow above my mouth. But you know, we're going for it. We're trying something new. But in terms of relievers, that's what we're here to talk about. And as always, we'll go over the injuries and transactions from the past week. We'll look at Rick's closer rankings, look at three guys that are rising, three guys that are falling. And then we'll talk about players that we were right about in the preseason. Take some victory laps. And then next week, if you stay tuned, we'll talk about the players we were wrong about. And you can hear us talk about how we can learn from our mistakes, which is always the best way that you can go about that. And then we'll wrap things up with some relievers that we'll be watching over the next week. But you ready to get started with some news from the last week?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So we'll start off with our injuries. We have a few, none as notable as last week's when we had a couple big closers and a couple big setup men hit the IL. But now we've got some other ones that are somewhat notable. We'll start off with Jason Adam of the Rays, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a strained left oblique. He was the setup man basically all year for the Rays and was doing a great job of that, and also filled in whenever Pete Fairbanks got injured, and now he's gone. But I think this is good news for a certain individual on the Rays. How are you feeling things turn out here in Tampa Bay, and do you think Jason Adam makes it back before the season is over?
Ooh, I mean, obliques are tough, even if it's a mild one. Once you start seeing players hit the 15-day at this point in the season, it's, you know, you pretty much can drop them in any league, I would say. Even if you don't have IL, if you have no IL spots, they're
a drop. Obliques are really tough. They're like in terms of like figuring out when a player is going to come back from those, because it can be like 2 weeks, and also it can be like 10.
Yeah, and then the simplest thing, you could sneeze wrong, and then all of a sudden you're out another 15 days. So I mean that hurts. That definitely hurts the Rays bullpen. does give Robert Stevenson a little bit of a boost in holds leagues, I guess. I mean, I put him as the top holds option in my ranks today because he's got five holds in the past 2 weeks, and he's just on another level right now. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything like it with what he's doing with his strikeout rate and swinging strike rate. It's incredible. So yeah, that 1-2 punch of Fairbanks and Stevenson in the eighth and ninth is still very lethal for Tampa Bay. And if they get Adam back for the playoffs, you know, that gives them a really good seventh, eighth, ninth inning. They're going to need it because they've had all sorts of issues this year of injuries and
in the rotation, especially.
Yeah. So they're going to probably shorten up guys, starters. And then, you know, if they can find a, you know, solid sixth, seventh inning guy or solid sixth inning guy, you know, you have your starters go five innings and then, you know, give it off to the bullpen, which is the typical Rays way of doing things anyway.
Yeah. In leagues without unlimited IL spots, are you dropping Jason Adam?
Yeah, if there's no IL spot, even in holds leagues, unless it's a dynasty, I'd drop him.
Okay, fair enough. And then we had Jojo Romero of the Cardinals being placed on the 15-day IL with left knee patellar tendonitis just when he was starting to give us a lot of hope that he may take over that closer role in St. Louis. Got a couple saves, was pitching really well over the past couple of months. He hits the IL, but it sort of works out for the Cardinals as they get to basically immediately replace him with Ryan Helsley. How do you think the closer situation is going to work out here? Are we going to see a committee? Is it going to be Helsley? Are we just back to where we were when the season started with the Helsley Gallegos committee? How are you feeling here? And is Jojo Romero a drop in all leagues?
Basically, it's like the same committee. Yeah, I think Romero is probably a drop because, again, it's, you know, we're talking he might be back for the last week of the season. So, yeah, you're probably dropping him unless you're in super deep leagues or something like that. But yeah, I think we're back to the Gallegos-Helsley committee where I still think for now Gallegos is going to be the leader, whatever save opportunities come for the Cardinals. I mean, it looks like what the plan with Helsley is to kind of just have him pitch twice a week, throw about 20 pitches twice a week. And I don't know if it matters what inning he throws, but I know it's pretty much scripted with how he's going to pitch down the stretch. So I would prefer Gallegos still to Helsley. I don't know, for all of you who have been holding out hope for Helsley, that's just doesn't look like it's gonna, you know, be much value for him the rest of the way.
Yeah, because after such a long layoff, it's hard to determine how good he's actually gonna be. I mean, it's gonna be a really small sample that we see him anyway, but also like the fact that he's splitting time there and that he won't pitch on back-to-back days. It's a difficult situation to try to guess how much value you're going to get there. And it's probably not going to be a lot because the Cardinals aren't that great. So they're not getting many save opportunities anyway. So that's where things stand in St. Louis. And then we have a few setup men that also hit the IL. Keenan Middleton of the Yankees landed on the 15-day IL with right shoulder inflammation. Josh Spores of the Rangers was placed on the 15-day IL with a strained left hamstring. And Daniel Bard of the Rockies landed on the 15-day IL with right forearm fatigue. Who is most notable of these three to land on the IL? Who do you think is most impactful in terms of fantasy?
You know, Spores hurts a lot. He was really falling apart the last couple of weeks, but
yeah, his ERA is almost six.
Before he originally was placed on the IL, I mean, he was having an unbelievable season. He was, you know, becoming one of the top setup men in baseball. Looked like a sure, like a locked in, you know, setup eighth inning guy for Texas. And then, yeah, got injured, came back, was never the same really. And now he's back on the IL and still an interesting name to keep an eye on for next year. He's so close, I feel like, to just having a really big like breakout season. I thought it was going to be this year, but definitely an intriguing arm. Middleton too was having a good year. When we went to the Yankees, he wasn't getting a ton of holds, but he was still, you know, throwing the ball well, getting a ton of strikeouts.
He was swinging missed stuff.
Yeah, swinging missed stuff even got better. Yeah, in New York. So, you know, Blue Weisiga probably gets a little bit of a bump there, especially with now, you know, Chad Green's in the rotation. So their bullpen kind of, which after the deadline was,
you mean Michael King.
Michael King, yeah.
I was so confused.
I'm getting my Yankees starters slash middle relievers mixed up. But yeah, so it's pretty much Loaiza and Holmes and Canely right now is the only, the back end of that bullpen. So, but Middleton be a free agent also this off season. Mm-hmm. Another one of those guys that there's a lot of interesting names in free agency this year.
Yeah.
Like what are they going to sign for? How much money is anyone? Yeah. So
we'll have lots of time to talk about that this off season. Yeah. Middleton had a 0.68 ERA and a 34% strikeout rate with the Yankees. That was in a 13 inning sample. That's pretty cool. You mentioned Loaiza. He's got 5 holds since returning. He's got a 0.56 ERA, but he struck out just under 11% of the batters he's faced. So that's somewhat concerning. I mean, he's clearly having success, and this is a guy that I wouldn't say was ever a huge strikeout guy, but a strikeout rate that low is almost unplayable in terms of fantasy. But I mean, he's having so much success, but it's clearly a product of his 109 BABIP and 92% left on base rate. So I think that's a guy that you can sort of just ride while he's hot and being the top setup guy in New York. But as soon as things start to go by the wayside, I think it's probably time to let go, because those strikeouts are really hurting you. The lack of them, should I say? We'll talk about Daniel Bard a little bit more later, but that covers the injuries. So now we can move over to the transactions. We already mentioned Ryan Helsley being activated from the 60-day IL with a forearm strain, and we sort of already mentioned Chad Green being activated from the 60-day IL after undergoing Tommy John surgery. We talked about him last week. He is on the Blue Jays now, and he missed a long time, but he is back, and he is acting as a middle reliever. And I mean, I think we can go over this one quickly. I don't think he's going to have a lot of fantasy impact here, especially with how deep this bullpen has become.
No, not this year. He's definitely more of a wait and see what happens in spring of next year. And maybe he becomes another, a holds target for next season. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this year I'm not really buying in yet. It's tough. That first month coming back from Tommy John, your command's all over the place. It's a little usually messy.
Yeah, and we had a couple other guys activated from the 60-day IL. We had Mason Miller of the A's activated from the 60-day IL after dealing with a mild UCL sprain, and John Brebbia of the Giants activated from the 60-day IL after dealing with a right lat strain. It may be a little bit curious why I mentioned Mason Miller here, but they will actually be using him out of the bullpen for the rest of the year, limited to 50 pitches per outing, and that's somewhat interesting. He did get a hold his last time out, which is weird because he pitched multiple innings, but this is a guy with elite stuff, and he's pitching in a bullpen that is super shallow. He's going to be more of a bulk reliever, but I think that plays well in lots of leagues. Is this somebody that you're interested in leagues where these multi-inning relievers are pretty valuable, or I mean, even in very, very deep holds leagues?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, just based off the pure stuff, and we know, I mean, it's going to play up probably in the bullpen too.
Yeah.
The strikeout numbers will be there. I threw him on the holds list today. It's tough to gauge where to really put him, but definitely an intriguing arm, and someone who can kind of be like what Michael King. That's Michael King and what Chad Green used to be. But those two guys, like a 2-3 inning guy who gets a hold here and there, maybe a win. Probably not too many with the A's, unfortunately, but. Definitely, yeah, good. Hopefully good source of, strikeouts and keep your ratios down.
Yeah, and then John Brebbia in San Francisco, they like to employ lots of bulk relievers. So basically any traditional reliever that comes in is a candidate for holds. But Brebbia has been pretty good for them the past couple of years, was good prior to getting injured this year, had a sub 3.5 ERA, a strikeout rate over 30%. He locked down 6 holds. Is this somebody that you're picking up in 15 team holds leagues or deeper?
It's close. I've always liked Brebbia. This bullpen's a little bit deep at the moment. I mean, Luke Jackson's been pitching pretty well for the most part. Yeah. And even though Tyler Rogers has been struggling, I'm sure he's not going to lose his setup role anytime soon. So I think I'm kind of a wait and see on Brebbia, but yeah, definitely an intriguing, another intriguing arm, and someone the Giants are going to lean on probably as they make a push here in the last month of the season.
Yeah. And then the final IL activation we have is Tyler Kinley, who was activated from the 15-day IL after dealing with right elbow inflammation. This one's notable, not because Kinley has been particularly good this year, but because he's gotten the Rockies' last two saves. It looks like Lawrence is starting to lose that role there. He's really been struggling recently. I mean, it looks like it might have happened already. But is Kinley somebody that you're going to be picking up prospectively, as there's likely not many saves on the wire at this point in the season?
Yeah, I like him over Lawrence. Or I like him over what any like Lawrence has been at all this year. I think Kinley, I know he's battled a ton of injuries, but he's kind of the last, he's like the last good Rockies reliever outside of, you know, Daniel Bard from 2 years ago. Sure. It's like Kinley has been, he's proven he can pitch there and pitch well there. And he's got their last two saves, so it makes sense for them to kind of, for him to be the closer there, I think. And especially with how bad Lawrence has been. If you're like in a roto league, you need saves down the stretch, definitely look to Kinley, because he's probably not going to cost you too much in fab.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's going to be running to the wire for a Rockies reliever with an ERA nearing 7.
Yeah. But it's small sample size.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. 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 You can definitely blame it on that and not Coors Field. The final four transactions we have to discuss is Jorge Lopez, who was claimed off waivers by the Orioles. He was pitching for the Marlins. It's hard to keep track. He's pitched for so many teams.
Minnesota, then Marlins. Yeah.
That's right. James Karinchak of the Guardians was optioned to the minors again. And then Luke Little and Andrew Salfrank both had their contracts selected from the minors by the Cubs and Diamondbacks, respectively, and both were really good in the minors and have some interesting stuff. I'll let you choose. Who do you want to talk about?
So Luke Little is someone who definitely piqued my interest a little bit, just because of, well, he's a left-handed pitcher who throws, you know, touches 97 miles per hour. That's always going to be, you know, perk your ears up a little bit, especially he's a huge dude. He's 6'8", 220. Yeah. And for, you know, he's had some interesting minor league numbers as well. There's definitely some swing and miss there. I wonder, you know, I think there's a chance, because there's not a ton of left. Who's the other lefty in that bullpen? It's him and one other. It's Drew Smyly, I think, who's not even really, he's more of a bulk reliever. So I think there's a chance for Little to kind of rise up here, as long as his command is not a huge issue. I mean, that's kind of always been his thing. Talking about James Karinchak, it's, you know, similar. From the right, this is just from the left side. So yeah, Little's definitely an intriguing name in that Cubs bullpen.
Yeah, he's risen from high A to triple A this year, pitching to a 2.12 ERA across those three levels. At the higher two stops, double A and triple A, he had a strikeout rate north of 40% at each of those, but his walk rate was well over 13% at each of those. At double A, it was over 18%. So you're right to mention that the walks will be something that he'll need to figure out if he wants to have success at the major league level. But the stuff is clearly there. There's few lefties that can throw it as hard as he does. And with that imposing frame, that makes him pretty interesting. He is still only 22, so that'll be something to keep an eye on. Well, he's in his age 22 season, he's 23. But nonetheless, that's very young, especially for a pitcher, let alone a reliever. So that's definitely an interesting name out there. May hopefully can get into the holds conversation. In terms of Salfrank, though, since we started on the young guys coming up, he is somewhat interesting. He's 25. He's 26. He's in his age 25 season. I did it again. He pitched at double A and triple A this year, and he had success at both levels. 2.70 ERA at double A, 2.35 ERA at triple A. Basically the same sample sizes there. He had a 32% strikeout rate at double A and a near 38% strikeout rate at triple A. The walk rates are pretty high, but nothing near what Luke Little was doing. But I think Salfrank's pretty interesting. There's a lot of guys in this bullpen, so we won't likely get into that holds conversation there, but the amount of success he had in the minor leagues, backed up by underlying metrics like xFIPs in the low threes, sort of suggests that you know, I think this guy might actually be the real deal. He's also a lefty, and he's also pretty tall, 6'3", taller than me. But the Diamondbacks just keep pumping out lefties.
I know. That surprised me when I saw him come up. I'm like, oh, it's another lefty here. But I guess Mansaply hasn't been the same this year, and Nelson has been very hit or miss lately. So there still could be a need there if they started to sour on Nelson a little bit. So, mm-hmm. An interesting name, probably someone, maybe to monitor more for next year. But yeah, we'll see how the rest of the way goes for him, because that bullpen, I mean, they're still just trying to find three or four guys they can trust there. I think they have two right now, and the rest is still to be determined.
Yeah, and then we'll wrap things up with Jorge Lopez here. Third team this year, and he's back with the Orioles, who he was with a couple years ago. I forget when he landed with the Twins. I guess I could just open his player page and look at it. He was with the Orioles in 2022 in the first half. That was when he was really good, and then they traded him to the Twins, and then he was really bad. And then he's not been the same ever since. But now he's back in Baltimore. Is there any hope there that you think they can get him back to what he was doing the last time he pitched for them?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this feels just even though looking at what he's done this year and what the numbers say, maybe it doesn't seem like there's much hope. But it's just one of those things, like he's going to return. They haven't... They kind of have a need for a closer, I guess, because Batista's out and he could just walk back into the closer role by the end of the season, and then he's their closer in the playoffs. And it's just like he was the same guy they had in the first half of last year. Baltimore has been doing a really good job finding these relievers and getting value out of some names that we've never heard of before. And Lopez certainly has the stuff to be a really good reliever. We saw it last year, obviously, so it's him being back there where he's presumably comfortable, it should lead to some good results for him. It looks like he's already got a hold as well since being back.
That would be crazy if like the only place he can have success is the Orioles bullpen. Because he sucked there as a starter.
So
that'll be something to watch. They'll have contractual control over him next year. So maybe next year is when we see him get back to what he was doing for the Orioles in the first half of 2022. But right now, I think he's outside of the holds conversation. But like you said, already got a hold. So maybe we're wrong there. That'll be interesting to watch. But that's the transactions and injuries from the past week. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to cover the guys rising and falling in Rick's ranks here on In the Pen.
This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? Then you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick the 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100, so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy. Fantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen talking about relievers. We're going to cover Rick's reliever ranks, the closing time article. Almost forgot what it was called after years of doing this podcast. Years. This is my, like, I've been doing it for like a year and a half.
Episode 55, baby. Yeah.
Years. So as always, we cover three guys rising up Rick's ranks and three guys falling down Rick's ranks. So we'll start off. That's a tongue twister.
That is.
We'll start off with the guys rising the ranks. Who's the first guy you have that's that you're becoming more fond of in the closer territory?
Of course, this feel like this happens all the time. I had Carlos Estevez. I moved him up a little bit this week. because he had pulled off five straight outings without allowing any runs or walks. And then, you know, of course, right after I did that, he goes out and allows three hits, two earned. And but even still, there's, you know, the bigger thing with me putting him up, I think I rose him five or six spots. The competition's gone. Yep. You know, Matt Moore's gone. Reynaldo Lopez is gone. No one else in that bullpen is really pitching well at the moment. So
there's nobody with an ERA below 4.2.
Yeah, it's his job for the rest of the season. You know, I don't think Soriano was someone who intrigued me early on, but he's really struggled lately. So yeah, it's going to be Estevez's job for the rest of the way, and there still should be some value left, even if it's going to be rocky. There's going to be a couple blown saves here and there, maybe, but I'm sure he'll get some saves as well. Because as bad as this Angels team is, they have been somewhat competitive. I mean, he's at least had enough save opportunities over the past couple weeks to make him a closer to monitor. So. But yeah, we'll see what happens here. But yeah, he's at least the guy there, and there's about 10 teams that don't have one set closer right now. So that at least puts him around, you know, the 20th spot in the rankings.
Yeah, I think that's a stout evaluation there. It does bring up a good point though, that like, who's going to be the top setup options here, because they lost three guys, maybe four. They lost three guys in the bullpen: Reynaldo Lopez, Matt Moore, and Dominic Leone. And yeah, now they're sort of
Davinsky go too. Yeah.
Oh, and Davinsky. Yes, I knew there was one more. Yeah. So they've lost basically their entire bullpen, and now they called up, I think it was like five relievers they called up from the minors. And so who's your favorite here if you had to choose in terms of holds?
I like Soriano's stuff, but he's really been ineffective lately. Wance has had some, I don't know, Wance wants, he's had some times where he's been a pretty good reliever. Ingram's kind of interesting, I guess, just from the left side. I mean, Aaron Loop's there, but I think they should give, you know, some of their, like a younger guy like Ingram a chance to see what he does in, you know, high leverage situations down the stretch. I don't know. This team's so depressing. It's just like they're going to be so bad for so long, I feel, for Angels fans. But
I said this.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it was inevitable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's they're starting to be like a situation where it's, you know, Estevez and that's it, because I don't really, I don't know, it could be a different holds situation every week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like Soriano is probably the only guy to even consider there. Aaron Loop will probably get a decent amount of holds for the situation that he's in and how good he is, but I mean, I would not trust the skills there. He's really not been good since landing in Anaheim. So that's Carlos Estevez rising up the ranks. I think another guy that is rising up the ranks, and one that we touched on a little bit, is Giovanni Gallegos. I almost called him Gio Gonzalez. Same initials. But anyway, with Jojo Romero hitting the IL, Ryan Helsley returning, it seems like Gallegos does get somewhat of a boost. He was sort of splitting opportunities there with Romero, but with Romero gone, it now seems like he might have more opportunities, because it looked like Romero might start taking over that role full time. And now with Helsley back, I think Gallegos not only gets more opportunities because I think it'll be more evenly split, but I think he gets more opportunities in general because Helsley's going to be so limited in September.
Yeah, that's it for me. Like the fact that Helsley's not going to, you know, have a full workload to really be the closer there. And then there's really no one. I mean, Andre Pallante, no. Drew Verhagen, not really interested. There's not really anyone else interesting here. No. So as much as Gallegos has kind of struggled at times in the closer role, and he's a guy who's like, when he's good, he's really good. When he's bad, he's really bad. And as long as you catch him in a, you know, like a good spurt in one of his heaters, he's a really valuable reliever, even if he's not getting a ton of saves.
Yeah, and he hasn't really been good recently, but maybe September he can turn it around. It hasn't started off too well. He just allowed two earned runs in his most recent outing, but he will get at least a few save opportunities in September. So that's something to keep an eye on there. And who's another guy rising up your ranks?
Yeah, not a ton of movement here. I guess we already talked about him a little bit, but Tyler Kenley, just because... Okay. I guess he's a closer now, and he could have some sneaky value down the stretch for basically nothing. I mean, I don't know what he's probably rostered under 5% in Yahoo leagues and most leagues, probably outside of really deep, you know, 16 team, maybe NFBC formats. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Even still there, spoiler, definitely have a claim, using some of my remaining $3 to try to put in a claim for him this weekend. Yeah.
He's 3% rostered on Yahoo.
Yeah. He's kind of he might be the last remaining option you have to if you're looking for saves, you know, in these deeper formats.
Yeah, and I think people will likely have forgotten about him after being injured for so long to start the season and then basically right back on the IL. But last year, in a 24-inning sample, he had a 0.75 ERA while striking out 27% of batters, and that came while pitching in Coors. So definitely some interesting stuff there. He's got a really good slider, and he leans on it a lot. His PLV percentile is 74th percentile this year. Pretty good on that pitch, and he, like I said, he hasn't really gotten into a groove this year because he hasn't pitched much. He also throws his fastball 96 miles per hour on average, so that'll play. Mostly a two-pitch pitcher, but I think he's somebody that should be pretty interesting as long as he continues to get those saves, because I wouldn't really trust any other reliever in Colorado. Just pitching in Coors is not great, but if you're in saves, I think it really doesn't matter too much.
Yeah, that's where it's pretty much just if you're in roto leagues, you need saves. He's like maybe one of the last options you're going to have to add.
Yep. So those are the three guys rising the ranks: Carlos Estevez, Giovanni Gallegos, and Tyler Kenley. So we'll now talk about some guys falling down the ranks. As Callan always says, as guys climb up the ranks, some have to fall. And these are those guys. We'll start off with Craig Kimbrell in Philadelphia. He's been struggling in the second half. I'm sure you didn't drop him too much because, at this point in the season, it's really hard to make drastic changes like that. But he's definitely been struggling a little bit in the second half. I think since the All-Star break, his ERA is 3.68. Not terrible, but I think since the beginning of August, it's been a lot worse. And that is correct, 4.85. Not great. The strikeouts have gone, and most notably, he's walking a lot of guys, and that's been a problem of his in the past, especially a guy that's a two-pitch pitcher who's pretty easy to figure it out if you, like, I don't know. If you get his number, I feel like it's like, you know what's going to come. It's either the fastball or the curveball. Mm-hmm. You can sit on one or the other. And he was so good in the first half. You know, it had like regression was inevitable, but it is somewhat disappointing, but also expected that he's struggling a little bit to close out the season. And Jose Alvarado got a save this past week.
Yeah, that was kind of the reason why I dropped him as much as I did, was the fact that they went to, you know, Sunday they had Kimbrell get the save and Alvarado pitched the eighth, and then on Monday they flipped the script and had Alvarado pitch the ninth and Kimbrell work the eighth. And sure, magic could be matchup based, but even still, even if it is, no matter what, that's still, you know, that's a committee. That's what we're talking about now. So that's, you know, with only a month of the season left, that definitely hurts if those two guys are forced to split up saves. So it gives Alvarado a little bit of hope, or a little bit of a little bit of value in save-only leagues now, too, I guess. But he also hasn't been, you know, he still doesn't look right since he came back. It's a shame we're not going to see, you know, early season Jose Alvarado again, it looks like, at least anytime soon. So, but Kimbrell, yeah, the strikeouts went. They're just not there anymore. If they feel like they need to kind of mix things up in the ninth inning, then that's definitely not trending in the right direction for Kimbrell.
It doesn't really look like it was matchup based. It looks like
that's what I thought too. Yeah,
Alvarado faced all righties, unless I don't know what Matthew Batten writes. He bats right. Yeah, I think he faced all righties because I think Luis Campusano batted for Trent Grisham. So yeah, I don't think it was a matchup thing. So that's definitely something to watch there. I feel like Jose Alvarado probably rostered in a lot of leagues at this point because he's been so good this year. But yeah, that's something to watch.
For sure.
Who else is rising or fallen down your ranks?
So, you know, he's been on this list one way or the other for a while, but I think Kyle Finnegan's back on the fallen list. Yeah, he hasn't pitched that well. Let's see, going back to I think his like last four outings, he's, you know, swing and miss stuff's down. He's starting to allow more runs, more hits. I think, you know, not only that, but Hunter Harvey's been mostly, and I'm not as of up to date as of today, but I don't think Washington played today. Yeah, I mean, Hunter Harvey's been pretty much like flawless over the past 2 weeks. So I just, you know, I do think there's a chance Finnegan could lose the job. Yeah, he's allowed four runs over his last three, four, five, six in the third innings.
Yeah.
You know, only four strikeouts in that time, three walks or two walks. So, yeah, three walks. Yeah, there's, you know, he's kind of going back to being what we thought Kyle Finnegan was going to be. Maybe he's just fatigued. It's been, I mean, they really, really leaned on him in August. He's 14 and 14 outings. Yeah, I mean, he was great in August. The, you know, gave them 14 strong outings, 10 saves. But now, yeah, no saves in September, and Hunter Harvey's pitching well. So yeah, I don't know how safe his job is right now.
Sure. And to put some numbers to that, Hunter Harvey returned on August 15th. He's tossed 11 and a third innings since then, comes with a 0.79 ERA and 13 strikeouts. On the other hand, Kyle Finnegan, since Hunter Harvey returned 11.2 innings, he struck out just seven batters and it comes with a 4.63 ERA. So, yeah, I mean, those are pretty opposite numbers there. The strikeouts have disappeared for Finnegan. Hunter Harvey striking out a lot of guys, not allowing any runs, and Finnegan allowing a lot of runs. I doubt we'll see a change at the end of the season. The Nationals don't really have anything to play for at this point. But, yeah, it looks like Kyle Finnegan finally starting to hit that regression that we expected to come for a long time. But we can close it out with two more guys falling down the ranks, Carlos Hernandez and Gregory Santos, both in the AL Central. Carlos Hernandez just not getting saves and rarely ever pitching, and Gregory Santos pitching, not getting saves, and gave up a save opportunity to Brian Shaw yesterday.
Yeah, I think Santos might be done as for getting save chance. I mean, it's weird. I don't know how Brian Shaw's been pitching really good for them. His strikeout numbers are like insane. I don't know what that's about. That's so random that the White Sox would just like, they can't get anyone else in their bullpen to have any success, and then Brian Shaw comes in at 36 and just becomes their best reliever. But yeah, I wonder if Shaw ends up finishing the year as the closer. And then with Hernandez, yeah, it's just lack of chances. And when he gets chances, I mean, he had a horrible August. He then not a great start to September as well. So it's both these guys, you know, we had some high hopes for after the trade deadline, and it has not panned out yet.
Yeah, and they're using Shaw like crazy. Since August, I think he's tossed over 20 innings, which is quite a bit for less than a month and a half. Pretty weird at this stage in his career. At 35 years old. But yeah, I had some high hopes for Santos. I think they'll have to wait for the offseason, and then maybe we can put him in the guys we were right about when he finally becomes a good closer. I mean, he's been really very solid this year, but just hasn't had many save opportunities since becoming the closer, and then also has had a couple bouts of struggles throughout the year. But I think that's what comes with a 24-year-old pitcher that throws really hard. But that's unfortunate there. And then Carlos Hernandez the Royals are so bad.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do, really. It's the Royals.
Well, those are the guys falling down the ranks. Craig Kimbrell, Kyle Finnegan, Carlos Hernandez, and Gregory Santos. We're going to take another break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about the players we were right about in the preseason here on In the Pen. And we're back on In the Pen. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham talking relievers. We're going to talk about the players we were right about, just to give a little bit more about this segment. We discussed plenty of relievers in the preseason, many of which we were wrong about, but that doesn't mean we were wrong about everybody that we had strong opinions on. So it's time to take some victory laps. I know at this point, it's sort of weird, especially for relief pitchers, that it's like you could take a victory lap now and then a guy could totally ruin his season in like 2 weeks. So we may be eating some more crow here, and just that'll be really funny. We talk about a guy here in this segment, and then next week it's like, we were wrong about this guy. But yeah, we're going to cover 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys that we believe we were right about, at least somewhat, both in the positive and negative direction, just to take some victory laps and see, you know, what processes we took in the preseason that led to us getting these guys right and how we can carry that over into next season. But you ready to get started?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. We'll start off with the big one that I think everybody knew was coming if you listen to this podcast for the past year, Pete Fairbanks. This one was it sort of waffled in terms of whether or not we were right. But I think the way that it's ultimately turned out is we were right. I was so high on him. I know you were high on him. Callan was also high on him. He was just so good in the second half last year. And then this year struggled with injuries, twice hit the IL, but has been able to hold on to the closer role every single time that he's been up, which is super weird. I don't think any of us saw that. The 20 saves that he has this year are sort of what I predicted he would have if he like pitched the whole season. And the Rays sort of did their goofy stuff and didn't land on a closer and sort of just switched things up. So that's like about what I expected. I think it's just the innings aren't really there and the strikeouts weren't as high as we thought, but 34% strikeout rate. He's got an ERA of 2.41. He's got 20 saves across 37 innings. I will definitely take that, especially with the replacement value that you had when he was on the IL.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. Cause you know, you kind of know where you, at this point, you should know Fairbanks is probably going to miss some time every season with, you know, at least one IL stint. So it was really, and we had no, I mean, obviously we had no like information, but like just the fact that the Rays actually was stuck with one closer. And even like you said, when Fairbanks was out, it was Adam.
Yeah.
They so never bounced back and forth between two different guys at one time. Uh-huh. It was clear cut roles in the back end of that bullpen, which is definitely refreshing from a fantasy perspective. And you know, watch, we're gonna be super high on Fairbanks next year and he's gonna start splitting the role with someone because the Rays like to do that type of thing. But he was, you know, it started off a little slow, the injuries, and just, you know, he wasn't getting a ton of swing and misses, but then like, we kind of, you know, we stuck with him through the second half. And just like last year, you know, he was a second half guy last year and he has been this year as well. So yeah, it's definitely been great to see him, you know, get to the 20 save mark as well, and you know, just be a dominant reliever this season.
So what do you think we can take from this victory lap that we can bring into our analysis this offseason? Is it just guys that were that are good down the stretch, like take a look at successful relievers towards the end of the year and see if those skills that they displayed then are things that they might be able to carry over into the next season?
That's definitely one thing. Yeah. I mean, when I going into like a new season, trying to, you know, get like the starter, my starter rankings, you know, it's not, I don't just look at stats and numbers from last season. I look at numbers from last season as a whole, but this at the same, like the same value. I want the stats from this, like the second half of the season as well, because, you know, especially for relievers, it can be a tale of two seasons. There's, you know, I think anything over for reliever, like 20 to 25 innings pitched is a sample size that you can kind of work with and trust a little bit. So, you know, relievers are always tinkering, changing things up, adding pitches, just, you know, adding different things. So, you know, what they do in the second half, I feel is more, is more important than what they do, you know, in the first half or over a full season.
Sure. Next guy we'll take a victory lap on is Yoan Duran of the Twins. We all thought that he would have the most saves for the Twins, despite it not being clear that he was going to be the closer to open the year. It looked like we would have somewhat of a committee with him and Jorge Lopez, because that's what we saw in the second half of last year. And we all were not really convinced with how Lopez pitched for the Twins, and Yoan Duran, one of the brightest young relievers in baseball. It seemed like skills were going to win over there and that he was going to take over that closer role. And that's exactly what happened. He was really incredible this year. 24 saves were not really what we would have hoped for a guy that was the closer the whole year, especially with his stuff, but we'll take it. 2.60 ERA, comes with a strikeout rate of 33%. That's really good. I still think there's a higher potential for him in terms of ratios and strikeouts and stuff, but this is really good. I mean, just the fact, like last year he was really great, 1.86 ERA, but he only had 8 saves. So I think quadrupling those saves, I can't do math, tripling those saves is very, very beneficial, especially since we were so high on him in the preseason.
Yeah, I think, I think we'll definitely take this season from him, especially where looking back, I remember him being in that kind of pick 150 range, 150 to 160 range with, he was going after Scott Barlow and
he was going after Munoz.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Seawald and Munoz were both kind of going above him. So, there was obviously a lot of, speculation as to, well, it makes sense, it probably makes sense for him to be more of the setup guy again with, Lopez being the closer. And that just, that didn't last long at all.
Mm-hmm.
Partially due to how good Duran was, partially due to how bad Lopez had pitched. But yeah, it's, 24 saves, probably won't get to 30 saves, but he's definitely going to get to 25 plus. And, we'll definitely take that from that value from where he was going in drafts, and 75 strikeouts already, so he's gonna break 80 probably. So it's a really good season for him.
Yeah, and I feel like the lesson here is pretty clear that it's like you just want to trust skills. If there's what seems to be a committee or a potential closer of the future that's sort of on the cusp there, either with age or lack of experience in the majors, I think you just always want to side with skills there, because even if things don't work out, the guy doesn't become the closer, he will likely have the best ratios and the best strikeout numbers, and that's always good to have on your team, especially for a guy as elite as Yoan Duran. So those are definitely some guys that we'll be looking out for in the offseason, the guys that may not have been the closer full-time this year or at all this year, but clearly have the skills to be a closer and are pretty close to taking that over. So that one, I think, is a pretty clear lesson.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's especially in that range where we talk about, pick middle 100s, that's where you kind of want to take a chance on skills and upside versus just having the job for opening day, because that never, that could change in a week or two. So go with the skills over status.
We'll also take a victory lap with Paul Sewald, who pitched for the Mariners and the Diamondbacks this year. I think the consensus here was that many people were concerned that he was going to split time with Andrés Muñoz, but we looked at the usage last year and also looked at Andrés Muñoz's injury history, and it all suggested that Paul Sewald would likely have the majority of the saves, because that's what he had last year. So I really thought that everybody was just going, oh, Andrés Muñoz throws harder, so he's going to be the guy who's the closer. And I think this is a situation where it's like, oh, this guy has better skills, so he's going to be the closer. But I don't know if Sewald has bad skills. I think that's something that people overlooked, that they were undervaluing his skills because he doesn't throw as hard as Andrés Muñoz. And so far this year, 30 saves, 3.29 ERA, 33% strikeout rate. We'll absolutely take that.
Yeah, that's because it's funny to go with him right after Duran, because we talked about Duran.
Exactly.
Take the skills. And yeah, Munoz did have, we'll say he's got the higher upside of Sewald.
He's got better stuff.
Yeah, for sure. But it's not to say that, Sewald was really good last year.
Yeah.
He was good the second half of 2021. I mean, it's not like it's not like he's just, Jorge Lopez who came into Minnesota and was bad for the second half of 2022. So I think this is a situation where I like what you said. It's kind of, we looked at you know, usage in September of 2022 to kind of get a gauge for, all right, so pretty much the same bullpens here and intact, minus I think Swanson was the only big name who didn't end up being there. So let's just see how they use, you know, how they used everyone in September and August of last year. And it definitely pointed to Sewald being the guy. So, you know, there was nothing to suggest that that wouldn't be the same case to start the year this year. So that's why I was, you know, I think I had him 10 or something to start the year. And I know we talked him up a lot. We all had him as the highest, having the most saves in Seattle. So, as much as stuff matters, if you have a guy like Sewald who's still very good, still an all-star type reliever, then you look at usage, and that's when usage kind of becomes that tiebreaker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, this next guy, we mentioned him earlier. He landed on the IL, and that's Daniel Bard of the Rockies. He was really good last season, 1.79 ERA. He had 34 saves. He struck out 28% of batters, but none of us were really convinced. He was lucky in a lot of areas, and he's also very old, 38, and pitching in Coors. And there were so many factors that led me to completely avoid him everywhere. You couldn't really completely drop him off your closer ranks because he was the closer to open the year. And then basically as soon as the year started, everything sort of went exactly as we expected. Just six appearances into the season, and he allowed his first run, and it was sort of all downhill from there. He had a 4.70 ERA this year, got just one save and struck out less than 20% of batters. Really not great. And I think he was pretty lucky too. 6.81 xFIP suggests that he was really, really bad. And yeah, I feel like this one was so obvious, and we were just vehemently opposed to even considering drafting him at any point. I mean, it was always just like the, like, buy or sell. And it was like, buy Pete Fairbanks, sell Daniel Bard. And it was always just like so clear to me. And I'm sure there are many drafters out there that like just didn't listen to us. And they were just like, he's the closer. I don't really care. He was really good last year, sub-2 ERA, sure, got a lot of strikeouts, and they just went for it. And he basically got negative value there. So, I mean, yeah, I think that one was really clear, but the fact that we were like so staunch in our beliefs, I think that was really important.
So yeah, he's been, I mean, so that's a guy where you look at the X stats and all the underlying metrics, and that's where you see those from last year and you're like, nope, this isn't happening again. Mm-hmm. He's kind of the Alex Colome, Mark Melanson, like buyer beware, closer option for the season. How bad he's been? Well, of any reliever, of all the relievers who have had at least 20 innings, and he's thrown 46 innings, anyone that's thrown at least 20 innings, he has the worst xFIP in amongst all relievers, and the worst Sierra. I think he might be the only one with a negative. Yep, the only one with a negative strikeout to walk rate.
Yeah,
on the
45
year.
Walks to 43 strikeouts.
Yeah, it's been a really tough year for him.
I don't know. Yeah. It was so obvious. It was so obvious. I would have been so surprised if it worked out again.
Yeah,
and it's like the Rockies too. It's like the Rockies pitching development. You're just like, okay, if he starts to struggle, they're not going to help him out at all. I think he was dealing with like the yips and like mental health stuff too. So it was really just like a disaster season for him, and it was easily avoidable. You just don't draft him. But I'm sure some people got really desperate at points in their drafts and went for it, and it just didn't work out. But yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. If all of the underlying metrics and all the numbers, the peripherals, including age and situation, all add up to a guy that you should avoid, don't just say, oh, he's the closer, he was good last year, I'm going to go for it, I'm going to take my chances. It like usually you should be trusting those numbers, trusting your gut there.
Yeah, exactly. That's like we were kind of talking before. It's like it seems like the easy one, but you still have to, trust the underlying numbers. More often than not, they will be right.
Yep. And then another guy that we already talked about, Ryan Helsley of the Cardinals. I wouldn't say we were as opposed to drafting him as we were for Daniel Bard, but this was a guy going inside the top 100, and we were opposed to that because not only was last year pretty much he was not going to replicate that, But also, this is a guy with an extensive injury history. And also, he did not have a clear claim to that closer role in St. Louis. It looked like he was going to split time with Giovanni Gallegos like he did last year. And after posting a 1.25 ERA with 19 saves this year, 3 ERA, 7 saves, 33% strikeout rate, just about, but it came across just 27 innings because he was on the IL for a while.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, like you said, it's, we weren't out on him, but it's like, he doesn't need to, there's no reason to draft him inside the top 100. And I remember in our TGFBI league, he went like in pick like around pick 110 to 120. And I kept passing. I'm like, maybe it's time. I don't know. But I still ended up just like something, you know, it's like with Pete Fairbanks and him before the season. I know it looks different now, but looking at them before the season, there's not a huge difference yet. There was probably about an 80 pick difference in ADP.
Yeah.
And you're still talking about guys who are often injured, who, you know, the stuff's awesome, throw hard, but they're also dealing with some sort of committee, you know, thing too, with Helsley dealing with Gallegos, Fairbanks dealing with Adams. So, you know, it just seemed like, you know, I'm just going to wait and take, you know, I'd rather just, if Helsley's like my only option there, I'd rather just wait and take a chance on a Fairbanks or, you know, Duran.
Yeah, I think that's a really good parallel there. And I feel like the lesson to learn here is, if you're not like super sold on a guy and you feel like the ADP is too high, then you just wait for somebody else. Yeah. Because a lot of times, like, you'll see somebody who had a breakout season the year before and they'll just get bumped up because they're the new shiny toy. And Ryan Helsley was so good in 2022. It was definitely warranted that people were really hyped about him, but he wasn't the clear closer. And I think when you're drafting closers, especially inside the top 100 or even inside the top 125, you got to be like at least like 80% certain that they're going to get the majority of the saves, if not all of the saves. And that was not the case with Helsley. And he had just 1 year of success. Like, you can look at the underlying metrics and his stuff was so good. So you can say like, oh, I believe that he's going to be just as good the following year. But it's like, okay, even if he is, he's got Giovanni Gallegos to deal with and an extensive injury history. So I think There was a lot of stuff pointing to that price being a little too high. And I think that's something to be wary of next year, that when guys are going in the top 100, they should be the best of the best closers with a 100% certain role.
Yeah. You really don't want to take a committee guy in the top 100, unless you're in one of those super, you know, roto leagues where closers just fly off the board in the first couple of rounds. And I guess maybe you feel pressed to do the same, but even still, it's tough to just, I don't know, for me, it's tough to justify that, because there's, this year we got a little bit lucky. I feel like closers have been good. They've, for the most part, there hasn't been too many busts like in the top, you know, the top group of closers. But yeah, it's tough to justify taking a chance on someone who might be in a committee top 100.
Yeah, and I'll quickly mention, this is not a guy we'll take a victory lap on, but both Callan and I had Emmanuel Clase as the MLB leader in saves. And while he has not been great this year, definitely would not take a victory lap on him. He does lead baseball in saves with 38, so that's an interesting point there. But we'll move on to another one that I think I'll just take personally, because I don't think anybody was backing me up on this one, but Bruce Dark Gratterall. And this one's sort of interesting as well, because I said he would be the closer for the Dodgers, and he hasn't been the closer this year. He's got 7 saves. He's got a 19% strikeout rate, both not great numbers, but he has been really good. 1.38 ERA is nearly 2 runs below what he was at last year. So I was super high on him, but he was going after pick 300. So it wasn't like you were going too crazy. And 7 saves is pretty decent, but to have ratios that good is really, it does really well for you in fantasy, no matter what. And Rick looked up how good he's been by the Yahoo Player Rater, and they had him at number 100. So I'll definitely take a victory lap on that one, even if he didn't quite get as high as I thought he would. He's had a really, really good season, and I was really high on him.
Yeah, I know, I was surprised. I know he's been really good. It's been a really quiet season. Again, like, the thing for me is I just want to see those strikeout numbers jump up, and they haven't this year, but he's still like, the ERA is under 2. I mean, he's still just a very effective reliever. Who's a don't. Yeah. I mean, he pretty much just like cleanses your ratios week in and week out because he doesn't allow any runs really. So definitely value. Yeah, I was surprised to see him the 100 on our in our pitcher list league. that's pretty impressive for someone who has how many saves does he have in the year?
Seven.
Okay, so something. Yeah, he's definitely. But just that's mixed league value there. Still top 100 player.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure what to take from this one. Like he gets a lot of ground balls, and I think he's just like a good pitcher. I'm not sure what to take from this one. I just felt like he has been good in the past, and I thought he might be better this year, and he was better this year, which is crazy. He's been really lucky, I think, because his xFIP is worse than it was last year.
Yeah, that is. He's like one of those guys who I think is just you. It's going to be hard to kind of like judge him off of some X stats and, you know, his player value or pitch value numbers. I think it was what pitcherless or RPLV value had him really high. And I don't know if it was Stuff Plus or one of the other, you know, sources. I think it was he was low, and he's going to be really. Because he's just a heavy sinker baller.
Yeah, that's his only good pitch. 94th percentile PLV and everything else is below 50.
Yeah, just throw a heavy sinker, just throw a bowling ball, get ground balls. And yeah, it's just, you know, he's different from everyone else. But right now, you know, it's going to be tough to rank him next season, I feel like, because it's like everything's telling me to, you know, not be high on him. But then at the same time, he's now done this for like two straight seasons. So it's like kind of a...
And it's the Dodgers.
So it's like, yeah, they're not going to make him worse. You know, it's.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and he's still young, too. He's still super young. Maybe he develops a better slider and starts getting swings and misses. That would be sick.
That's what I thought was going to happen this year.
Yeah, he's close there. He could have a huge breakout anytime now.
Well. That's that one. And then we'll wrap up with two that are sort of in the same boat. AJ Puck and Alex Lang. We both thought that they would be the closers for their teams. I think Puck more controversial than Lang because Puck had a little bit of competition with Dylan Floro there. Lang sort of had no competition at all. And these are in the same boat because they gave you a lot of value in the first half. They got you a lot of saves, and then everything sort of fell apart in the second half. Neither are really the closer for their respective teams anymore, but I mean, you sort of gotta take the wins where you can. Puck was great in the first half, and Alex Lang was great in the first half as well. Got you a lot of saves, and then not so much anymore. But I think overall the value that they gave you in the first half, especially if you jumped off the ship before it rode ashore, I think that's that you probably feel pretty good about those picks.
Yeah, I think like the first 3 months, you definitely got a lot of good value for them. And the lesson here, or I guess the takeaway here, is they were guys you were taking, you know, shots on late in drafts at the end of drafts. So, you know, you weren't giving up. You weren't, you know, using high picks on them. You weren't spending a ton of money in, you know, auction drafts on them. They were, you know, good dart throws at the end of drafts that I think we discussed earlier on, and we're pretty, I think I had both of them in the top 20 heading into the season. So I think the value is pretty solid for you. You basically got what you came for there, or what you were expecting to draft there. So not huge hits, but definitely guys that I think you're happy with rostering for the first half of the year.
Yeah, we'll take it. But that'll wrap up our victory laps for this season. To run down the list again: Pete Fairbanks, Johan Duran, Paul Sewall, Daniel Bard, Ryan Helsley, Bruce R. Gratterall, and AJ Puck, as well as Alex Lang. Next week, like I said, we'll talk about the players we were wrong about. So if this one was too positive for the listeners, for your taste, and you want to hear us talk about how stupid we are, then definitely stay tuned for next week. I honestly think that'll be more fun because... I think it's really interesting to be like, oh, this is what we thought, and we were completely wrong. And I think we'll have a much longer list next week, too. So that'll definitely be interesting to talk about. But that'll wrap up this episode of In the Pen. Rick, plug your stuff. What are you working on right now? And let everybody know where they can find all your work.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. Still plugging away. Reliever rankings, and I know, you know, it's late in the year and we're starting to get into football season, but there's still, like we said, this is an interesting, you know, interesting part of the baseball year as well. It's really, I mean, it's definitely a good time to be a sports fan. And, you know, if you have PL Plus or if you want to join PL Plus or PL Pro, you know, we have a bunch of, we have chats for both baseball and football. Mm-hmm. Our QB List team does a great job. I used to work over there, QB List. It's the great group of, you know, really smart people, bringing you a lot of good fantasy info. I love it because, like, no one else, I mean, I usually win. I've been having success in leagues because, just those guys are really think outside the box, and you know, I get a lot of good value from their stuff. So, you know, definitely something to think of. This is a great time of year. Again, we have a lot of, you know, a lot of good discussions going on. So yeah, PL Plus, PL Pro members, definitely worth looking into for not just baseball related stuff, but football stuff as well. Now that we're into September, as Callan knows.
Yes, he does, but he's not here, so I won't stand for it.
He's definitely a football guy. Yeah,
he is. Please support QB List. I'm sure it's a great website. I don't think I've ever been on it. Yeah,
we'll get you basketball lists up and running soon.
I like basketball. I like watching basketball. I'm a Warriors guy, so I mean, of course, I've had a lot of success in recent years. But yeah. I don't even follow basketball that closely either. Yeah. I definitely more so than football. But I'm just like a baseball 24/7, and then usually, actually, when the off season starts, that's when I start playing Pokemon.
Okay.
I'm just I get a little sick of playing MLB The Show, and I'm just like, all right, let's fire up some Pokemon. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. I need to update it, but you can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. You can check out my other podcasts, Free Baseball. It's on at Athletes Hub on Twitter or on my Twitter, as well as the First Pitch podcast, which is Pitcherless daily podcast. And I do the weekend edition. So check there every Saturday and Sunday mornings for that. I also do the Reliever Ranks article. And if you're interested in reading about Ke'Bryan Hayes, I came out with an article on the 31st, that one came out. So give that one a read as well. But that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. Check back with us next Friday morning for the next edition. We'll be talking about players we were wrong about, but we will talk to you all next week.